Welcome in this lecture on EU energy and climate policy. I'm Florian Dirks, research fellow at the Jean Monnet Center for Sustainability in Clermont-Ferrand. I will guide you through three aspects related to climate policy. To start with, I will outline the concept of carbon budgets and its importance in understanding the time remaining to decarbonize our society. Secondly, I will give a broad outline of the relative contribution of different greenhouse gas emissions, as well as the sectors where these emissions originate. Thirdly, I will give an outline of the main EU and energy and climate policy frameworks. After this lecture, you will be able to understand the concept of carbon budget, the relative contribution of different sectors to the total quantity of greenhouse gas emissions, and thirdly, the main components of the current European energy and climate policy framework. There are four types of greenhouse gases influenced by human activity: carbon dioxide, methane, different types of halogens, and nitrous oxide. Of those gases, carbon dioxide, or shortly CO2, is the most important greenhouse gas in terms of long-term warming impact. The global natural carbon cycle kept CO2 concentrations in the atmosphere fluctuating between 170 and 280 parts per million over the last 800,000 years. And recent evidence even indicates that a concentration of 320 parts per million has not been exceeded in the last 2.5 million years. This dates back to before the emergence of the Homo erectus around 2.1 to 1.8 million years ago. The carbon cycle has been progressively disturbed by anthropogenic activity, accelerating from the Industrial Revolution in 1750 onwards, causing the CO2 concentration in the atmosphere to peak currently at around 410 parts per million. Our direct yearly CO2 emissions, released by burning fossil fuels and industrial activities, have increased from around 22 gigatons per year in 1990 to 37 gigatons per year today. Indirect emissions, primarily caused by anthropogenic land use changes, are today estimated to be around 2.5 gigatons per year. These numbers are in stark contrast with an estimated historical maximum pre-industrial carbon dioxide emission rate of only 4 gigatons of carbon dioxide per year. Because CO2 concentrations in the atmosphere are directly related to an increased temperature, we can estimate how much carbon dioxide we can still emit to stay below a certain temperature increase. Nevertheless, there are still uncertainties to these amounts, related to, for example, feedbacks in the climate system or the temperature response to other greenhouse gases. The most recent review of carbon budgets in line with respectively 1.5 and 2 degree warming compared to pre-industrial temperature has been carried out by the International Panel on Climate Change in 2018. They found that in order to have a 67% chance to stay below 1.5 degree warming, we could still emit around 580 gigatons CO2 from January 2018 onwards. To limit warming to 2 degrees, we have around 1,170 gigatons of carbon dioxide left. With the yearly carbon dioxide emission of around 37 gigatons today, this equates to around 10 years of constant emissions. Luckily, if policies are effective and if there is sufficient political will to step up decarbonization efforts, we can expect to see those emissions to decrease gradually. If the carbon budget is depleted linearly from now onwards, we have time to completely decarbonize our societies until around the year 240 or 2060 to reach either 1.5 or 2 degrees warming, as can be seen on the left side. Now, how do we distribute the remaining carbon budget to countries and societies? There is no clear answer to this question, as there exist multiple equity-based frameworks that take into account GDP, responsibility for historical emissions, etc. To illustrate the orders of magnitude of per capita emissions, we could distribute the carbon budget on a per capita basis from 2016 onwards, the year of the Paris Agreement. Because at that moment in time, all countries agreed to collectively pursue efforts to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius. As can be seen on the right side, such a distribution proves more or less feasible for different countries. Some, mostly wealthy countries with a relatively high per capita emission level, would need to decarbonize in a couple of years. Other countries that have a lower per capita emission have even multiple decades to reach carbon neutrality in this case. In addition to the countries shown here, you can look up any other country on the website in the description. In order to understand and propose feasible decarbonization strategies and to assess their potential impact, it is important to know where emissions are originating. A well-known and detailed source of territorial emission data are reported on a yearly basis to the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. Because compiling emission inventories takes time, the inventories contain emission data for each sector in the economy up to 2 years before the yearly submission. An important distinction is here to be made between direct greenhouse gas emissions from energy or industrial processes and the emissions caused by disturbing the natural carbon cycle through agriculture, forestry, and land use change, shortly termed LULUCF. Because disturbances in the natural carbon cycle play out over long timescales, it is difficult to attribute these emissions to specific years. Direct emission data, on the contrary, can be derived more reliably by using sectoral emission data. The graphs represented here contain the information from those emission inventories, expressed in carbon dioxide equivalents, for either individual countries on the left or the whole world on the right. It can be seen that in the world, and in most countries represented here, fossil-fueled energy production and use is the primary cause of greenhouse gas emissions. Energy-related emissions are fairly equally distributed across four sectors: direct energy production, transport, housing, and industrial energy use. In addition to fossil energy emissions, there are also direct process emissions in the industry, such as halocarbons in the chemical industry and carbon dioxide emissions of cement production. The third and smallest sector contributing to the increase in greenhouse gases is the waste sector. If you want to further explore the distribution of emissions across sectors, you can find an interactive emission explorer in the description. Now that you know where emissions are coming from, and how much we can still emit to stay below dangerous levels of warming, we will have a look at the major energy and climate policy frameworks in the EU. It is beyond the scope of this video to outline the large interacting patchwork of local, regional, national, and sector-specific EU-wide policies that influence current and future emissions, but two main European frameworks are important to understand the collective European framework to reduce emissions. These are the EU Emission Trading Scheme, or shortly EU ETS, targeting primarily the energy sector and industry through a market-based instrument, and the Effort Sharing Regulation, acting on sectors and actors not covered by the EU ETS, such as transport, housing, agriculture. The EU Emission Trading Scheme, or EU ETS, is a market-based instrument for heavy energy-using installations, such as power plants, industrial plants, and airlines that organize flights within the EU, together covering around 40% of the territorial emissions of the EU. In the EU ETS market, installations either receive permits for free or can buy and exchange permits to emit carbon dioxide, nitrous oxide, and perfluorocarbons from aluminium production. After a trial phase between 2005 and 2007, the EU ETS underwent successive reforms in different phases. During the first two phases, from 2008 to 2012, almost all allowances were given to installations for free. During the current third phase, running from 2013 to 2020, there is a single EU-wide cap on these emissions. In the beginning of phase 3, around 80% of allowances were handed out for free to the manufacturing industries, primarily determined based on the relative importance of international trade. Power generators, on the contrary, did not receive allowances for free in this third phase. There is a fierce debate on the effectiveness of the EU ETS system, coinciding with a larger ideological debate on whether norm setting is to be pursued for effective climate policy instead of market speculation. Plant level emission and allowance exchange data are not fully available, but there is evidence that some type of industrial installations made profits out of the EU ETS system without decreasing the emission intensity of their production. Furthermore, there is empirical evidence that the emission intensity of most industrial installations remained around the same since the start of the system. However, a decrease can be observed for the power sector from 2007 onwards. For the sectors that are not covered by the EU emission trading scheme, such as transport, housing, agriculture, and waste, the EU enacted the effort-sharing decision in 2009. This decision established binding annual greenhouse gas emission targets for the different member states in the EU for the period 2013 to 2020, corrected for differences in wealth measured by GDP. The framework serves to reduce EU-wide emissions with 10% in 2020 compared to the year 2005. In 2018, the European member states enacted a new commitment to pursue a total emission reduction of 30% in the year 2030 compared to 2005. This is called the Effort Sharing Regulation. The regulation defines annual emission reductions for the year 2021 to 2030, starting with the average emissions between 2016 and 2018, from a point in time between 2019 and 2020 onwards. In this new framework, member states dispose of different flexibilities. First of all, member states that have national reduction targets significantly above the average, or that did not allocate EU ETS allowances for free to the industrial installations, have the option to use these EU ETS allowances for compliance with the effort sharing regulation. Secondly, if member states emit below or above the yearly emission threshold, they can keep the surplus for later years or borrow allocations to submit later on. Thirdly, member states can buy and sell allocations to each other. I hope you enjoyed the lecture and that you learned more about the concept of carbon budget, where our emissions are coming from, and how the EU aims to reduce emissions. I would strongly encourage you to dive deeper into the different topics and to respond to ongoing impact assessments for these regulations organized by the European Commission. Feel free to reach out to me with further questions, either on this platform or on Twitter.